Welcome to Theology in the Raw, where tough questions are raised, easy answers are avoided, Christianese cliches are mocked, and the Bible is studied with fresh eyes. This is not your grandmother's Sunday school class, folks. This is Theology in the Raw. And now, here's your host, Dr. Preston Sprinkle.
Hey, welcome back to the show. My name is Preston Sprinkle. I'm glad you joined us on today's program, Theology in the Raw. We're going to return back to the Old Testament today. We've spent the last few weeks, or a couple weeks at least, looking at Christianity and the poor. We've been looking at the Syrian refugee crisis, and we ended last week talking about, well, I was a sermon that I preached on Sunday at City Church Boise a couple Sundays ago, and I replayed that on the air here over the span of three shows, and that's where we ended last week, finishing up our discussion on the Syrian refugee crisis. Just a quick reminder that this Sunday, what is that, December 13th, I believe, this Sunday is Refugee Sunday. And if you want more information on how you can participate, you can go to wewelcomerefugees.com. And this is a website put together by several Christian organizations, including World Relief, World Vision, Q Ideas, and several others that have come together and put together this website and tried, you know, what they're trying to unite churches together in order to figure out what the church can do in the midst of this crisis. You know, it's one thing for us to go back and forth about what our nation should do and, you know, kind of go through political channels to help the refugees. But the primary question is, what should the church do? What should the people of God do in this moment of crisis? I don't think we should just rely on our secular nations, on political leaders to solve this problem or at least address this problem. I think the church, empowered by the Spirit of God, washed by the blood of Jesus, should look up and say, what can we do when there are millions and millions of people in need? So go to wewelcomerefugees.com and you can find out more information there. What I want to do today is go back to the Old Testament. Our ongoing series on this program is we're surveying the Old Testament. We're just going through these different books of the Old Testament and looking at key themes and ideas and asking the question, how can we live in light of these biblical books? And so we finished a couple weeks ago, we finished the book of Numbers. And so I want to jump into the book of Deuteronomy. And in order to set the context, let me just talk about some introductory pieces of information that we need to know before we even dive into the book of Deuteronomy. First of all, the name Deuteronomy means second law. That's what Deuteronomy means. Deuteronomy comes from, well, it's actually a Greek word that comes from deutero and nomos, meaning second law. Now, that doesn't, the name is a little bit of a misnomer because this isn't a second law really in addition to a completely different first law. Deuteronomy represents a second giving of the law to a new generation of Israelites. So if you remember from the book of Numbers, the old generation of Israelites, the ones who first sat at the base of Mount Sinai and received the law from Moses, they're the ones who listened to the instructions from the book of Leviticus. They heard different commands from Exodus and Numbers. That generation is dead. They wandered around in the wilderness for 40 years out of punishment for their disobedience in the wilderness. And so now we have a new generation of Israelites who were just babies. They were kids playing around in the desert for 40 years, and now they are adults. And so now Israel, this new sort of generation of Israelites, are standing in the plains of Moab on the eastern side of the Jordan River. They're getting ready to go in and conquer the land of Israel. But before they do that, they are going to receive a renewal of the Mosaic or Sinaitic covenant, this old covenant that God makes with Israel. And so Deuteronomy represents a renewal of that covenant. And in renewing that covenant, Moses is going to talk about the laws of that covenant, and that those laws are represented in the book of Deuteronomy. Now, most of these laws we've seen before, most of the stuff in Deuteronomy, the laws at least, are a repetition of the laws that were given to the older generation of Israelites, but some of these laws are new. I'm not going to sort out which ones are new, which ones are old, but if you read through the book of Deuteronomy, and in light of the book of Exodus, you'll see some repetition, you'll see some new stuff as well. Let's talk about the historical situation. Well, I've kind of already said the historical situation. Moses is preaching to the new generation of Israelites standing on the eastern shore of the Jordan River. And the book of Deuteronomy represents those, for lack of better terms, those sermons. Now, don't think sermons in our modern sense of the term. You know, Moses doesn't have a pulpit. He's not preaching these on Sunday morning, okay? But the book of Deuteronomy does represent a series of speeches that Moses gives to Israel. And that's why the book of Deuteronomy has a very sermonic, rhetorical feel to it, because that's what it was originally. It was a series of speeches that Moses gives to Israel. And if you read through, especially Deuteronomy chapters 1 through 11, and if you read it through that lens, it does feel, you can see how these feel like speeches. They don't feel like letters or, you know, written documents. They feel more like speeches that have been written down, because that's exactly what they were. Now, the purpose, if I can summarize the purpose of Deuteronomy in one sentence, it would be this: to remind Israel of God's past and present grace towards his people, and to articulate how Israel can maintain a covenant relationship with their God in the promised land. Okay, so it's all about grace, and yet it's all about how to maintain a covenant relationship with their God. So, put differently, the book of Deuteronomy blends grace and obedience in very healthy ways. It talks relentlessly about grace. That's all about obedience. And some people, I think in our modern mindset, we don't know how to put those two together. We often think, well, if you talk about grace, that means you can't talk about obedience. Or if you talk about obedience, then you're neglecting grace. The Old Testament, and I would say the Bible as a whole, doesn't know that distinction. That is a modern distinction that we think if you talk about grace, you can't talk about obedience and vice versa. The Old Testament, the Bible as a whole, talks relentlessly about grace and will turn right around and talk about obedience. Why? Because obedience is the necessary response to grace. If you talk about grace, then the next thing out of your mouth should be, therefore we should obey. And if you harp on obedience, that doesn't mean that you don't believe in grace. It just means that you believe in grace so much that now you therefore believe that you should obey. And so we see these twin themes of grace and obedience woven together perfectly throughout the book of Deuteronomy. Let me give you a basic outline of the book in case you're reading along. I would recommend, you know, if you're listening to the show, if you're a subscriber to the podcast, if you're trying to get something out of the show, it is best to go ahead and read along. I know it's a lot of stuff to read. Deuteronomy is 34 chapters, but you can do it. In the next few shows, when we're talking about in the book of Deuteronomy, and it wouldn't take that much time, and you would probably get a lot more out of it. So let me break down the book for you. Chapters, I'm going to give a fourfold breakdown. Number one, the first chunk, Deuteronomy 1 through 11, talks about entering the land of Israel. Or it's Moses exhorting Israel on how they should enter the land of Israel. Or not like a battle plan per se, but it's talking about God's past and present grace towards Israel, his presence with Israel, his demand for obedience of Israel as they are settling the land. And so chapters 1 through 11 is probably the most lively section in Deuteronomy. It's probably the easiest section to read. If you read Deuteronomy 1 through 11, you're going to be like, man, how come I didn't read this book more often? Like it's going to feel like, well, some people compare it to like the Romans of the Old Testament. I think that's, for on many levels, a very good comparison. It does feel kind of like the way that the book of Romans serves and shapes and gives foundation to the New Testament, so also the book of Deuteronomy does the same for the Old Testament. That's Deuteronomy 1 through 11. The next section, 12 to 26, talks about life in the land of Israel. And this is the chunk of Deuteronomy that's a bit harder to read, because Deuteronomy 12 to 26, it contains a body of laws and commandments. And these are where we read about not eating catfish and what to do with certain bodily fluids how to act in warfare. It talks about different agricultural laws, different civil laws, sacrificial laws. And so this section could seem irrelevant for the modern day Christian, but we must read these ancient laws in their own context. We must look at them as if we are an ancient Israelite looking at these laws. And so there are certain things that the modern day believer is not going to obey, because we're not under the old covenant authority. We are under the new covenant, and some laws don't transfer over. Other laws, they may contain principles that are very applicable to us, but the specific law doesn't transfer over. This section, when we're reading about the laws of the Old Testament, it can get kind of complicated. I don't want to say, just pass over it or don't pay attention to it, because it's still God's word, but we must read it, first of all, in the context in which it was written. We must read it as a word for Israelites and then try to figure out how it is also a word for us. The third section is Deuteronomy 27 to 33. And this section talks about the blessings and curses in the land of Israel. God tells Israel, if you obey these laws, you will be blessed. If you disobey these laws, you will be cursed. And this section, 27 to 33, talks about those blessings and curses. And so it wouldn't be too much to say that this section is one of the most important sections for the rest of the Old Testament. The rest of the Old Testament, when you get from Joshua all the way through the end of the prophets, that the rest of the Old Testament looks at whether or not Israel lived up to the law, whether or not they obeyed the law. And so if they obey the law, they're going to be blessed. If they disobey the law, they're going to be cursed. And from Joshua to Malachi, the rest of the Old Testament looks back and talks about these blessings, talks about these curses. And when Israel is cursed, the rest of the Old Testament explains, this is because you disobeyed the law. Or when they're blessed, the few times they're blessed, it says, this is because you were obedient to God. And oftentimes, later Old Testament authors refer back to this section in Deuteronomy 27 to 33, as proof as to whether they were obedient or disobedient. So this section becomes incredibly important, especially for the Old Testament prophets. They often quoted this section of Deuteronomy to show whether or not Israel was obedient or not. The last chapter, the last section is really one chapter, Deuteronomy 34 records the death of Moses, the death and burial of Moses. And this is how the Pentateuch ends, with the death of Moses in Deuteronomy 34. We are out of time, and in the next show, we're going to dig into some of these key themes in Deuteronomy. The first one we're going to look at is how Deuteronomy emphasizes Israel's relationship with God, and the stuff we're going to read about there is going to be applicable to how we can maintain a relationship with God. So join me next time on Theology in the Raw.
For more information about Preston, please visit his blog, Theology in the Raw, or his website, PrestonSprinkle.com.